Hey, it's Isaac from the Mossy Pod, and before we get into today's episode with the hosts of the Gender Symposium for this year, 2024, I just wanted to give a quick little disclaimer about the student media fee. For one, it's been $20 for a while now, but we want to up it to $50. Two, you can opt out of it if you can't afford it, so upping it to $50 really won't harm someone that cannot afford it, because they can opt out. And for three, it allows publications to keep going. Things like Synergia, the Palatine Hill Review, KPH, Mossy Log, Mossy Pod, Sunburn, all these events that host musicians and different media forms can't happen without a larger budget, as we've already had to do budget cuts. So, if you could fill out the form and the petition to allow for a higher student media fee, that would be great. Thank you, guys. So, oh yeah, welcome back to the Mossy Pod. I guess I always have to do that little intro. But let's just go around, introduce ourselves. So I'm Isaac, the host.
I'm Molly. I'm one of the Gender Studies Symposium co-chairs for this year.
I'm August. I'm also one of the co-chairs for this year's symposium.
And I'm Cameron. I'm the third co-chair for the symposium this year.
And then we'll just go over it again. Like, what years are you guys and what are you majoring in?
I am a senior and I study history, and then I have two minors in gender studies and Hispanic studies.
I'm a junior, I'm a biology major, and a gender studies minor.
I'm a senior, and I'm a sociology and anthropology major.
So I know we were talking about it before we started recording, but how do you end up becoming involved in the symposium? And it seems like you don't always need to be directly involved in that study.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different ways that people can be involved in the symposium. If you want to be involved as a co-chair, there's like a whole application process, but if you want to just like attend bi-weekly meetings and contribute your input, you can just join the committee, which just means showing up to the meetings and hanging out with us a couple of times, like five times each semester. I think it kind of turns out to be every other week. Or you can also contribute through contributing your academic work and participating on a panel during the symposium, or there's art curators and you can submit your artwork. There's a whole bunch of different ways to get involved.
And what does that look like? How do you actually, like, I know you just said how to do it, but how do you find those places to get involved? Because I feel like not enough people know about that, where you can apply, where to submit things.
Yeah, I'll say that we usually have a table at the
Seafair.
We usually have a table at the Seafair, so everyone is welcome to sign up for our email list, which is where like the information generally about meetings comes from. If you're interested in being a co-chair and you're not already on like email lists, I would recommend reaching out to Kim Brodkin specifically, and I'm sure she'd be open to sending the application. It's nothing too like extensive or anything. There's some like basically just like essay prompts, nothing too long, but you answer them and you do an interview with her, Kim. Yeah. And then
and also you can follow up the Instagram if you want. I don't know how much information about like the application process is posted there, but if you like, another way to get involved with the symposium is just through like attending the events, which start in 2 weeks, so you can follow the Instagram for more information, which is just LC Genderson, right?
Yeah, there's many ways to be involved with the symposium. I know it can definitely be a little bit overwhelming trying to figure out exactly how you want to get involved, or maybe how much you want to be involved, but there really is like no limitation in like the different ways we need and want people to be involved, because we definitely have people who, you know, attend like every single planning committee meeting and who volunteer to do tabling when we do tabling in J.R. Howard each semester, or we'll submit a proposal in the fall when we are, you know, trying to curate material for the symposium. And then there's also people who just will help us put up like posters, and that's it. Or there'll be people who just attend the events as an audience member. And some people get really, really involved maybe for one symposium because the theme or the topic really speaks to them, and then maybe they never really engage with it again. And I think that is a really, really cool thing about the gender studies symposium specifically, is there are so many different ways to get involved, and it can basically be whatever you want it to be in terms of your level of commitment. And it really takes shape based on the entire group of people who interact with it. It's not all the co-chairs who plan it. It's not all the people who attend the meetings. It's not all the people who present. It's kind of everyone and anyone, so.
How do the themes end up being chosen? Is it by a vote, or is there do you guys as co-chairs come up with it? How does that end up happening?
So I don't know. I assume this is the process for every year, what we did. So we sort of, I think it was each, we each came up with two or three ideas for the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically we were just sort of like, it wasn't really a vote. Like, we sort of just like would talk about it, and we would be like, you know, these two can sort of work together. Like, we can, you know, incorporate maybe this one into this theme. And so, yeah, so it just, being online ended up being like, I think it was, one reason I really wanted to do it was because it hadn't been done before. Like, we hadn't had really a symposium specifically about, like, digital technology, like, the internet. And considering it's been going on for 43rd year, right?
Mm-hmm.
43
yeah.
years, yeah. So I was really, honestly, I remember, like, being shocked that it hadn't already been done. And so I just thought, like, there's so much talk about, especially post-COVID, too. Like, so much charm was online. And, I don't know, I felt like there was a lot to say about it right at this moment as well.
Yeah. And I ended up being really excited about this topic because I really do feel like it was a way to incorporate a lot of the other themes and ideas that we had last summer when we first started, like, proposing these ideas to each other. Just because if you look at, like, the internet as, like, a platform or a space, you're able to talk about different things happening in different parts of the world or different time periods, or I'm trying to think about the other themes that we even had proposed. So I feel like a lot of them could be incorporated. I know law was, like, a big one, or, like,
yeah.
looking at
mm-hmm.
different pieces of legislation, and, like, that can be incorporated through
mm-hmm.
internet use, or, like, how are people talking about different pieces of legislation through the internet and social media, or how is the internet and social media affecting this part of whatever it might be? So
mm-hmm.
it's a good way to, like, like, this theme was a really good one, I think, in order to incorporate a bunch of the other ideas that we had.
Yeah.
What other ideas were you working with, and what were your thoughts? It seems like
yeah.
you guys are really interested in this topic.
Yeah. Some ideas were more, I think, fleshed out than
mm-hmm.
others, partially because when part of the process when you are a co-chair is, you know, you find out at the end of, you know, a spring semester that you got
yeah.
it, and then a lot of the
initial
brainstorming ideas happens throughout the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we first were working on this throughout the summer, it was a lot of, like, just thinking about, like, what are we interested in? What were things about previous symposiums that we attended that excited us, that we liked, that maybe raised, like, more questions, like what went unanswered from previous years?
Mm-hmm.
And then also looking back through previous symposiums and seeing what had been talked about, what hadn't been talked about. I know two things that came up, I think, a lot in terms of general theme was talking about, like, the law and, like, kind of, like, legal systems in general was one that was talked about a lot, as well as kind of, like, was it global feminism?
Yeah. I think
or
gender and sexuality, or,
like, globally.
Like, yeah, just looking at, like,
thinking outside
things,
the
yeah.
U.S.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of symposiums tend, just because we are in the U.S. and, like,
can be quite U.S.
It is very U.S.-centric, and I think that there's, like, a lot to say about, like, gender and sexuality and feminism and all of these different things in a more global mindset.
Yeah, and then the idea of, like, the internet, online spaces, digital technology came up, and part of the brainstorming process is not only just, like, oh, what are we interested in, but also, like, there's a lot of logistical stuff involved, because, like, something with, like, I can think of, like, oh yeah, the global one is, like, It's very broad.
International speakers,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, like, we couldn't realistically, yeah. Or, like, you know, what do we mean by global? Mm-hmm. Like, in what context? Or, you know, maybe having something potentially be too narrow, like, maybe mm-hmm. with, like, the law. Like, we don't want it to turn into potentially a symposium about the law and mm-hmm. just, like, you know, that be an aspect of it. And it, I think, became clear, like, the more we were talking, about the themes, and at the same time as you discuss themes, you discuss people you'd be interested to do the keynote speeches for. That kind of happens at the same time, and I think one sometimes informs the other.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think it did in many ways a lot in this case too. But the internet, we realized, became a really, really strong theme, not only for all of the reasons by itself, but also because we're like, hey, a lot of the things we are getting at or we're wanting to get at with, like, the law as a theme or global, like, spaces as a theme are really well incorporated mm-hmm. into the online theme, and
yeah.
could be, like, a really good kind of jumping off point for a lot of maybe those more specific questions. So
when you choose a theme like the internet, when people are then in the different talks themselves, do they choose that topic under the topic of the internet, or is it that you put forward these ideas that then they can take, and then you get speakers revolving around that? How does it function?
We kind of came up with, like, a list of either, like, sub-themes or categories or, like, questions that we were looking to answer, which we have published on our website,
mm-hmm.
That we would then refer people to when they were submitting their proposals for, like, their papers or roundtables or panels. So we would direct them there and try to have them... It wasn't limited to those questions, though, also, but kind of having those as a guide for, like, the kinds of questions we wanted to be exploring a little bit more. So I know, like, one of them was, like, looking at, like, surveillance and stuff like that, so people were able to incorporate that into a presentation and a panel that we're going to have. Well, on the other, like, end of the spectrum, like, more positively looking at, like, community building on the internet. So that's kind of how we did that for, like, the panelists and the students. And then for the keynotes, we were kind of seeking them out because of their work kind of falling into whatever category, whatever sub-theme or general theme we were working with. So
we did offer them, like, not necessarily, I think it was a list of questions,
mm-hmm.
but, like, in a similar
guidance,
vein, like, what we
yeah.
were
mm-hmm.
wanting to
mm-hmm.
The things we were wanting to address and, like, discuss within
mm-hmm.
the symposium, and specifically why we thought they them and their work
mm-hmm.
would work, like, really well.
Is there anything you guys are particularly looking forward to covering that you really, you want the broader student body to know about or to consider?
Yeah, there's so many exciting
yeah,
things. I, like, don't know what, like,
really
specifically to say.
Exciting things. I mean, I think it really just depends on what you're interested in. We have two phenomenal keynote speakers this year
mm-hmm.
that we're very, very excited are even coming at all. And so to have them speak is just, like, a dream come true, literally.
Do you want
to
plug them?
Yes, yes, actually, yes. Moya Bailey and Avery Dean Griff, who are, yeah, just great, and we're so excited to have them. We've got a lot of LSE students
mm-hmm.
presenting papers and work of, we've got some poetry, we've got some, like, workshops, from LSE students, as well as students from, like, nearby institutions, is all we get a good amount of proposals from.
Mm.
I don't remember the question.
Just what topics do you guys like?
Right.
What makes you passionate about this?
Yeah.
There's so many awesome events happening. Each one. You could have a whole podcast probably dedicated to just talking
yeah.
about. I am, one thing I do think is well represented throughout the schedule, which we were hoping for, is when we were deciding upon this theme, the being online theme, we really liked that the theme had a lot of, like, nuance to it. because we wanted something that you could talk about in both a positive, constructive way, and then something that you could also maybe discuss the negative, more destructive elements to it. And with the internet and stuff, it's, you know, we thought it was a prime example of that. And I do think all the different events and particularly the panels, like, I feel like there is a really good mix of that. People, even within, I think, like, an own individual person's work, like, I know there's a lot of discussion about, you know, queer representation in, like, TV shows and in online spaces. There's a lot of discussion about, like, fandom specifically, too, and how, again, it can both be a source of community building, but then also can kind of actually stoke even further division. And I just think that's a really cool thing, because so often, just in my own personal experience, especially when you hear things in the news specifically regarding maybe like legislation around like internet usage and stuff, or even just hearing older adults in my life talk about the internet or social media, it often feels like people will go to extreme either way, like it's all evil and bad and it's the worst thing to happen to us, or people maybe not thinking too much about the fact that so much of our life is online, or how much information we give to like software companies, that kind of stuff. So again, that nuance and looking at the complex nature of, you know, internet and online spaces and us as people using them is a good thing, and ultimately I think the most like just correct thing, because again it's very complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the like subcategories and themes that I really was hoping that we would be able to incorporate was online sex work, just because I feel like that is a fairly new phenomenon, and I think that definitely has like changed the way that people are able to either like, if they are sex workers themselves or if they're consuming that kind of media, it has definitely changed because of the internet. And we've luckily been able to get some people together for a panel about that on the Friday afternoon of the symposium, so everybody should go to that.
Yes.
That sounds really interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you guys think, I don't know, you might be the best person to answer this, Molly, but how do you think about sex work now versus, we'll just say, like, the porn industry as a whole, and how does that differ within gender and how that's treated?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited to attend the panel and learn a bit more. I'm sure that, like, there's, like, a lot that has, like, been impacted because of the internet, especially regarding, like, gender and, like, people's identities and, like, what's able to be saved on the internet versus, like, if people want things to be saved, all of those kinds of like elements. And I know like even like outside of like sex work, even just like sending nudes, like things like that, like sexually explicit content, that then are people intending that to be public? Are they not? Are they intending it to be saved? Are they not? I think that all of those questions are really important and definitely have like a gendered element to them, just based off of like who's sending, who's saving, the power, potential power imbalance there. It's definitely a topic that like I think is really interesting and definitely like deserves to be like questioned a bit more, at least like for myself. Like I want to do some more reading about that and investigate that for myself a bit more, and I'm excited to see what the panelists like have to say about it and like learn from them specifically.
Are the panelists all students or is it people from outside?
Yeah, there's a couple students that intern for an organization called the Cupcake Girls in Portland.
Oh, that sounds familiar, but tell me more.
Yeah, they've done some like a campus associated events before.
Yeah.
I think they do like mostly advocacy for
sex workers
generally, not necessarily like specific to online sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have someone coming, I believe they're confirmed to come from the Oregon Sex Workers Committee, specifically does online sex work. So I'm curious to see what they have to say about that in their own experience, like personally. So.
Yeah, because a few symposiums ago, it was actually one of the keynotes, was a multi-person panel discussing sex work, and the panel itself was made up of people who all had, in some way, shape, or form, had personal experience with doing sex work. And that was a really amazing panel, very informative and a really cool thing to have, I think, especially in an academic setting, because one, sex work has been either straight up just like ignored, not talked about, or when it has been done from a very almost kind of clinical, I think, perspective, where you had a lot of people talking about it, researching it, but maybe not, who hadn't maybe had any personal experience themselves, or were not actually, you know, talking to people who were sex workers themselves or had done sex work. And so I think there is something really powerful about having a academic institution have a thing on sex work, specifically in this case online sex work, but just platforming actual sex workers, people mm-hmm. who've actually, you know, worked in the industry to discuss mm-hmm. it and talk about their experiences, and, you know, versus talking at them or about them. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's awesome to talk in theory, but also you need to
yes.
understand what it means to, like, practice these things as well.
Yeah.
Have you seen any intersectionality between what you guys plan on covering in the symposium and just the general Lewis and Clark body?
On, like, the very surface level, most of the presenters are Lewis and Clark
yeah.
students
yeah,
themselves.
Yeah, lots of those.
So, and, you know, all these, you know, we talked about earlier, we had like some kind of guiding questions, themes, topics to consider when we opened call for proposals in the fall. But whatever people submitted,
mm-hmm.
they submitted. We didn't tell people what they like, you know, could or couldn't, you know, give to us basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's being presented is what people wanted to present
mm-hmm.
on, felt passionate
yeah.
enough to write up a proposal, send it to us for a committee to review,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, have agreed to, like, speak on or present on or talk about. So, and yeah, that very basic
yeah.
sense, I would say it's relevant because, you know, your peers thought it was relevant enough to, you know, volunteer to talk about. Because, you know, this isn't a paid
mm-hmm.
position. You know, students who submit stuff, it's, you know, purely because they want to do it.
That's really true. Like, we gave the, like, guiding questions, the guiding theme, but, like, our peers are the ones that actually, like, made it materialize and, like, created the content for it. Like, this is very, I think, reflective, like you said, of what Lewis and Clark students and what, like, students in general in this region, in this moment in time, want to be talking about. There were definitely, like, I think elements of the theme that we were hoping people would cover that maybe we didn't get any proposals about. And also there were so many proposals that we got that are answering questions that maybe we hadn't fully considered before. So I think it kind of goes both ways there.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know, like, so many of them discuss, yeah, multiple things, talk about queer baiting, and I've definitely heard many a conversation
yeah,
on campus about, you know,
sure.
queer baiting, and, like, yeah, what that means, how people consume content, a lot of discussion about online, like, activism as well,
mm-hmm.
massive topic, and I think, you know, like, how...
like surveillance as well.
Surveillance.
Yeah. I think one other element, I don't know if you guys have any more to say on that, but I think one more element of it is the community dialogues too.
Oh, yes.
Which I think are a really good way for Lewis and Clark students. Like, you're going to these events for the symposium, you're hearing these things, you're listening to the panelists, maybe you yourself submitted work as well, and have been doing the research, having these discussions. Like, there is a space then, too, for students to go and actually, like, directly talk with their peers about it in that, like, more controlled environment rather
mm-hmm.
than just, like, at the bone or, like, in class or on social media, actually.
Yeah.
So I think that that could be, like, a cool way, too, for students not only engage, but also for the symposium to reflect what students want to be talking about more.
Yeah, I'll probably be hosting one of those dialogues.
Oh, cool.
So.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I look forward to doing that. And you mentioned this a little bit ago about, you know, you don't control people do or don't say. Does a school do that for you? Like, is there anything you're not allowed to cover?
Not
we were never
told
about.
Yeah. No, as far as we know, there's no, like, hardline rules.
Yeah.
Like, and there was nothing even for us that was, like,
mm-hmm.
this is, like, really considerable. You know,
yeah.
like, at least for this year, like, I can say, like we...
All of our ideas were, like, seriously considered as potential themes,
yeah.
so...
Yeah. Yeah, in terms of, yeah, censorship or anything, you know, there was never, like, oh, yeah. You can talk about everything except these things, or, you know,
yeah.
you can't go there, because, yeah, that just wasn't ever something we were thinking about, because
yeah.
that was not something we at all would want to do. You know, of course, like, for quite a few of the talks, some of it touches on some really, like, heavy subject matter,
mm-hmm.
Potentially triggering subject matter, so... You know, we, when designing the structure of the symposium week and, like, putting people on panels, you know, there's a lot of consideration on, like, you know, like, making sure that this is, like, the appropriate
mm-hmm.
space to be able to actually have this conversation in a way that is, yeah, productive, constructive, and not, you know, harmful to people or, you know, allowing this to be, like, the yeah, like, just the right, like, format to discuss this kind of thing. So great care was taken in that regard, for how things should be presented so that they can be talked about appropriately. But yeah, there was never an indication of, like, no, we absolutely cannot talk about this, or if someone wants to talk about this, we have to tell them no, because, you know, the whole point of the symposium is to listen and to discuss, and, you know, as long as both of those things are being done in good faith, and, you know, I think basic kind of, like, community agreements that, you know, most things like this would have are being followed, nothing is really off limits, nor do I think it should be.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you know, even if you don't, like, fully agree with a certain point, or, like, you know, that's never been, like, sort of where we, like, it's really is meant to showcase, like, all the different ideas and thoughts surrounding themes of gender and sexuality online, whether that be, like, very, like, pro, this is a great environment for queer people, say, or, like, you know, this is actually a really damaging environment for queer people. I have my opinion on that. I definitely know that their presenters have very different opinions on that. So, but that's, I think it's important to hear all of that, because you can't, it's really easy, I think, to get boxed in into your own ideas and, like, only sort of listen to people who agree with you. And I think it's important to, like, give space to people who disagree. And that's not to say, like, people who are genuinely, like, problematic or, like, genuinely harmful to other people, but, you know, like,
again, it's all about having good faith conversations and being willing to listen and learn from each other, to educate, to share in our collective knowledge and experiences. Because, again, the symposium, I think, is the goal of the symposium for any year, regardless of the theme, is about highlighting our communities, you know, including, like, the ones we have on campus, in the greater, like, Portland area in general, amongst, like, people who care about gender studies, who care about issues related to gender, sex, sexuality in general. So, yeah.
How has the symposium been doing in the past, or even in general overall? Because I know this year we had, from what I remember, less attendees of, like, the race monologues, and while that's a different thing than a symposium, I'm still curious if there is an impact that's being seen where people are, I guess, to put quotes, like, caring less about important topics.
I really hope that's not the case this year. I hope to see all of the all the listeners out there at all of the events.
Every single
Can't
one
wait.
Of you.
Yeah.
I'll say that historically, I'd say, and this is just from what I've sort of picked up on, is that gender studies symposium historically has had more significant turnout than the Ray Warren symposium. Sorry. And you know, I do think that that says something about how I don't know. I do think that that says something about what is valued at this school and what is not. And obviously, you know, there's more than just like wanting to attend. Like, people have lives and classes and all of that. But I do think that, you know, I hope everybody comes to the Gender Studies Symposium. But historically, we have had better turnout. And, you know, I think that's important to just be aware of and think about the implications of.
Definitely. I think I just want to say, too, like, I don't know, like, it's really easy to, like, look at a schedule and be like, oh, yeah, totally, I would 100% go to that event. But, like, it really does mean a lot when students do show up, because all of the presenters, like, I'm not just talking about the three of us right here, like, we've put in a lot of hours to this, but, like, all of your peers out there presenting, like, this is something they truly care about and something they're passionate about and they put their labor into. And it's such a beautiful and wonderful thing when you, like, see people coming and supporting the work that you're doing, or seeing people coming and, like, supporting your own peers. Like, that is really one of my favorite things about, like, my time at Lewis and Clark so far, is getting to go to the symposiums and getting to see the work that students have been working on, either, like, inside of their classes or completely separate from their classes. Like, it's just, it's so awesome to see all the cool things that, like, your peers are doing that you had no idea about, and now you get to see it. Like, how can you not be excited about that? It's like
awesome.
An hour and a half long panel. I'm sure you can find the time to come. And the keynotes. It's 7 p.m. Like, come and see it, you know? Like, what else are you going to do? Please.
Yeah, we... So far with the symposium, again, I haven't been a co-chair before for this symposium, so I can't speak too much on behind-the-scenes stuff, but people have been engaged and participating throughout the entire planning and build-up, like, not only with the committees, but, you know, submitting proposals. You know, we had more than enough proposals to fill a whole thing. We weren't concerned. There wasn't an issue of, like, oh, we don't have enough material for a whole three-day symposium or anything like that. There seems to be genuine interest on campus, not only from students, but also from staff and faculty, which is really great. And we've been, you know, lucky enough to, for the most part, you know, continue to have funding in order to do the things that are needed to, you know, have the symposium be what it's been and what we want it to be. And yeah, it does, I think, there is, I think, sometimes definitely a bittersweetness when trying to compare sometimes how some symposiums at the school fair with others, because they're all equally important and deserving of time and funding. And some things are, you know, like, I do think for one thing we have with the timing of the Gender Studies Symposium is it does happen in the spring. So I think genuinely by the time it happens, people have been hearing about it for longer, whereas maybe something like the Ray Warren Symposium happens in the fall. So I think some people maybe just not don't know about it, but, you know, they just, there isn't as much time allowed for the publicity for it in the same way that we benefit from happening in the spring. And then, you know, we are one of the older symposiums, so a lot of people just have heard about it or know about it, versus some maybe of the newer symposiums that are, you know, kind of getting the recognition and footing at the school. And of course, you know, between any given year, there'll probably be changes in attendance based off, you know, not only stuff like, you know, how many people are physically attending this school, like, you know, how do people's schedules line up with the week we decide to hold it in March? Also interest in the theme or, like, the specific keynotes, like, that's always going to waver. But there does seem to be strong interest in this year's symposium, which we are very grateful for. And because there does seem to be strong interest, that is even more of a reason, I think, for us to regardless of the theme, be as intersectional as possible, because gender, sex, and sexuality, while those are definitely the things we for sure focus on and highlight, those do not exist in a vacuum. Those interact just as much with race, ethnicity, class, disability, national origin, politics, all that stuff. And I think a lot of those things are discussed in this year's symposium, and I hope they continue to be discussed for all the ones to come, because they are just as important to talk about. And, you know, race should not only be talked about during the Ray Warren Symposium, nor should gender only be talked about during the Gender Studies Symposium.
Those are good thoughts. And before we wrap up, when is it happening? What week in March? Get
in
out the date.
2 weeks, March 6th through 8th. It's a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And there's events all day, pretty much starting at like 10:30 a.m. or something. I think that's like the earliest one.
Yeah.
And then events all throughout the day until our keynote event at 7 on Wednesday night is our first one with Avery Dame Griff, looking at like queer archives. And then Thursday night at 7 p.m. with Moya Bailey, who coined the term misogynoir, so looking at the experiences of Black women and misogyny on the internet. So, you can find the full schedule on the website and look at every single event, and it's super exciting.
And don't worry, because while the symposium sadly only lasts 3 days, the following week there is going to be a special exhibit in Watsek Library, and then there's also going to be both a digital and physical installation for the art show, which happens alongside the Gender Studies Symposium, because not only do people submit proposals to do panels and roundtables, but people also submitted artworks of all kinds of forms and media for the theme as well. And there's a lovely group of art show coordinators who have put a lot of time and effort into that, so you should also for sure check that out, because it's just as cool.
And lovely artists, of course, who submitted their art to be involved, and we're very excited about that as well.
Yes.
All right, thank you guys for being on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.